Hello, my name's Anne Fox, and a very warm welcome to show number 6 of Absolutely Intercultural, where we try to explore all aspects of intercultural interactions. What's the theme for this show? Your first clue is to identify the language in this song.
Sem hýsa skugga þeirra manna sem heiminum stjórna milli rándýr skvítra tanna sem vandanum eyða með einu stríki og allur þeirra pappír síðan safnar bara ríki og flokksvelin ofar að láta.
So, where are we? Well, I'm sitting on the nose of Jutland in Denmark, and that music comes from one of Iceland's best-known artists, Bubi, and seems to be some sort of anti-big business song. If you want to hear it properly, then it's available as a free download from the Icelandic Tourist Board. You can listen to it as you're inexorably drawn to booking your plane ticket to Reykjavik. Yes, today we're going north. I have a pet theory that some types of music and certain languages just don't mix, but I think that in this case, the African beat and the Icelandic lyrics is a marriage made in heaven. There are two ways of looking at intercultural matters, culture-specific and culture-general. I think today's show has something to satisfy both camps. It's culture specific because you just might learn something about Iceland and even Scotland. It's also culture general because in today's show I talk to someone who has lived and worked in another country for several years. In the jargon, she's a cultural informant, and you can learn a lot through what they choose to talk about and where they sound surprised, amused or irritated. Listen out for those moments which, following on from the ideas in the last show, tell you that some sort of cultural incompatibility has occurred. So now we'll hear from Gunhilda Óskarsdóttir, an Icelandic teacher who went to Scotland with her husband while he did his PhD at Aberdeen University about 20 years ago.
We were 25 years old. We started living in a small tiny village north of Aberdeen, and we brought Oscar with us, and he was 3 and didn't speak one word in the language. And
did you have a job when you were in Scotland?
No, I just stayed at home with the children for 2 years, and then I did my MEd at the university. People thought it was quite strange because I had 2 small children. You know, they thought it was strange to take on a master's degree with my husband doing a PhD at the same time. You know, in such a remote area as Colliston was, because there was no daycare for children, the people in the village. But it was quite strange because the women were at home while the children were small. Even though they had education and degrees, they stayed at home until the children went to school. They were teasing me, you know, by trying to be a superwoman and things like that, you know. But next prime minister of Iceland, you know, all these things, they still call me the, because they never forget how, you know, all these things. They thought it was strange to be so active. We had we met people before we came that had been there, that were very happy about it, that had been in the same university. And so we thought it but it was very different from what I imagined it would be. It was very, very remote village with just 100 people, and there was no bus or no shops or anything. There were no men really around because they were either over 80 or just small boys, because the rest, they were working during the day, and when the men came home, we didn't see them because then they went just into their houses. We lived in three houses, and the first two, you know, it was such a shock to come to Kurdistan, even though we love it now, and we try to go there as often as we can because it's such a nice and beautiful place and we have lots of friends there. But the first half a year maybe, it was very difficult. We lived in a house that was very cold. We were used to central heating in Iceland, but there was just a coal fire in this house that warmed up all the hot water and made the house warm. And so we had to lit the fire every morning and keep it going all day. And in Iceland, we are used to, you know, we never think about the water and the limits of it. So now you can much more appreciate it after being in a place like Scotland where, you know, people, when they came to visit me, they always wanted to do the dishes and things like that. And I just didn't know, because they were used to that, having a lot of warm water in Iceland. But you would have to think, has somebody got to go have a bath or what? You know, you always have to think about the hot water.
Did you find it easy to meet people?
Yes, because people thought we were quite interesting. You know, I had Oscar and we spoke foreign language and they thought I spoke funny English. And I got, you know, friends very soon that I still have a lot of contact with. We still keep in touch and have Christmas cards from these people, and we just, you know, we have made friends for life there. The first half year was a difficult time. You know, when we sing all the Scottish songs, you get all warm inside, something that really was just part of, you know, the hard things that became in the memory, yeah, something that you thought was maybe worth it. After all, brings back a lot of memories. And then there were a few other things that were quite interesting, I think, that were, you know, the cultural differences. If I sometimes baked a cake in the afternoon, and I remember the maple chocolate cake. And here in Iceland, when you bake a cake, you just have, you know, what you want of it. But I always, my friends, they always got so stressed when I baked the cake because they didn't want the children to have the cake. It was either it was too close to dinner time, if they would have more than one slice, they wouldn't eat their dinner, everything. They were always thinking about things like that. So if I made a cake, the children, of course, they loved it and they thought I was a lovely woman making this cake, but the mothers always got so stressed if I was making a cake, because I'm not making cake every day. We also saw another thing, that having coffee with you, you just, you know, have coffee until you say, no, I'm not going to have more. But they always just make one cup of coffee. That's a cup of coffee for the afternoons. We make maybe a whole bottle of coffee and we put it in a thermos and we just put it on the table, you know. And then always, you know, everybody had their hot water bottle, and we never went to bed without putting the hot water bottle in the bed before we went to bed ourselves. But the other things were also that how people were very, very friendly and how they took us, you know, as a family. And I think when you are a foreigner and you come to a country like Scotland, everybody helped each other. This was really, really nice. The fifth one, for example, it just drove around the village and peeped the horn. And he always came to me, yeah, and he always came in front of my door and called, "Hey, Miss Iceland, the fifth man is here. We have very good card from, you know, the North Sea." I always thought, you know, he came specially for me because I knew about how fish is important for Icelandic people. So he always picked something very special out for me, or every time. So it was they made you feel so special.
So you can see that the first 6 months are the worst.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
You're listening to Absolutely Intercultural, and you can catch us at our blog on www.absolutely-intercultural.com, where you can subscribe through iTunes or download the show direct from the website. You can add your pin to our Frapper map. The latest listeners to do that were Trevor King from Paris, Lon from North Carolina, I think, Fabio from Venice in Italy, Berit from Bonn, and Ebi Chan in Aomori, Japan. Welcome to you all. There have been some very interesting comments added to the blog since the last show. Lon points us to an important book in the discussion about whether our peers or our parents have the most influence on how we turn out. And Paul points out that you have to interact in order to learn about a new culture. Actually, the arguments are much more nuanced than I have just described them, so you really ought to go to the website to check them out in more detail. Now, down in Remagen, they've been continuing that discussion about culture as the software of the mind, so let's listen in.
Let us come now to our category Absolutely Theoretical. Now, here we don't want to have a learned discussion, but just a brainstorming exercise. We would like to invite you, the listeners, to play with the metaphor along with us, maybe while we're doing the show, or maybe you can tell us afterwards on the blog. In fact, I'm in the studio with two people here, and I'm going to ask them a question in a minute. So maybe you can already start thinking about it. You are supposed to finish the sentence, "I think culture is a bit like software because," and I'll come back to you. Even if it's not 100% plausible what we come up here, this doesn't make any difference. And I'm absolutely sure that on the blog we will hear when we've strayed too far off. So, in the studio, I'm with Carsten Knese, our podcaster, and also with Fernando. You may remember Fernando, because he was the first person to send in an audio file to us. Thank you for being in the studio today, Fernando.
Hi, Lawrence. Hi, Carsten.
So I would like to ask you to finish the sentence, "I think culture is a bit like software because." Who would like to start?
I think culture is a bit like software because there's such a broad variety. And there's a piece of software or a piece of culture for everything.
Okay, for me it's completely different. For me it's like something that makes me very nervous because it suddenly appears like in Windows, like when you get this blue screen and dead screen. And okay, it's because you, in culture, you get all exceptions and there is no rule.
All right. Okay. Now, I think we promised last time that we're going to concentrate on one aspect of a culture. And Fernando, I have a feeling that this might be something which makes you nervous. For example, updates. So think of the situation when you know you can do everything with your Word program and suddenly somebody comes along and says, "Oh, let me just install an update for you." So I think we should concentrate on these sudden updates. So not gradual updates which run in the background where we don't even notice that we have a new version, but these new ones which can be agonizing. And let's talk about similarities to culture. Can you think of any situations in your own culture in Spain, maybe? Can you remember any pieces that changed during that time in the last 10 years, things that were introduced in Spain, for example?
Oh, yes. I can think about a big one. That is partying.
Oh, okay.
Going party. Because since we got into the European Union, now our bars have to close very early. That's 5 o'clock in the morning. And, and we are very upset about it because people complain all the time like, "Hey, 5 o'clock is too early." But, you know, at the same time, neighbors understand that 5 o'clock is good time to go to bed.
So what you're saying is you have a new piece of legislation
Spain,
and where the bars were allowed to be open until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Or until any time.
All right.
And now we just can party until 5 o'clock in the morning, which some people find a little bit awkward and unfair.
Does that mean that young people hate the European Union all of a sudden?
No, they don't, but they feel that we should be partying until very late at night.
All right. Has that changed the behavior? Do you now go out earlier to make sure that you get all the drink and all the fun before 5 o'clock in the morning?
I think we don't. I think that we still have our patterns and we haven't changed that. But at the same time, we have to come back earlier.
All
So we have to do it quicker.
Okay. Well, in Germany, one big update was the introduction of the euro. Actually, I wasn't in Germany at the time. I lived in Belgium, but of course there it was a big update as well. Now, I don't know, have you fully installed that update?
I think I have. I don't count the money in the old currency, in the mark, in the D-mark anymore. But I know that many people still do. So many people still compare the prices in euro to the old currency. And then they go, oh, it's so expensive.
Well, in fact, I think that happens with big purchases. For example, when I buy a kebab, it's okay. I pay 3 euros. It's okay. Yeah. But when I'm buying something really expensive, I think, well, is that expensive or cheap? And I convert the whole thing into pesetas in our old currency just to know if it's really expensive or not. And that's probably not very good because the currency was different, like right. 4 or 5 years ago. So it's not interesting to do that anymore because prices have gone up. So, but we still do it.
Okay, I'm afraid we need to come to an end soon. There is more potential in this topic, I'm sure. So maybe we follow it up next time with another aspect of culture as the software of the mind. Thank you very much for being in the studio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you want to carry on the discussion, why not go to our blog and leave a comment? Or better still, send us an audio comment to contact@absolutely-intercultural.com. Finally today, our featured podcast comes from Sweden. It's called the Polar Bear Podcast and normally features interesting facts about Sweden, recent news, Swedish music, and by becoming a regular listener, you get an insight into everyday Swedish life as you follow the ups and downs of its presenter, Andy. This extract comes from a show first released in March and was a special joint podcast with the Canadian Zedcast. It contained what might be a world first, a proposal of marriage made on a podcast. You'll have to download the show to find out more. In this extract, the two podcasters are discussing some common misconceptions about Sweden and Canada.
One of the things that you did originally on your show was to get rid of a few of the myths about Sweden.
Yeah, I hope everybody's got them now.
The first one was that Sweden is not Switzerland.
How can you believe that?
I thought that was hilarious because I don't know how you could mistake the two except that they both start with an SW.
Yeah, and they're both in Europe and they're both cold.
At times.
Yeah, at times, yeah. Now, I don't know either, but the I've heard it a couple of times, actually. It's very often when you're in the United States and people ask where you're from, you say, you're from Sweden, and they, you know, they make the associations with the, oh, you know, the Alps and the watches and the chocolate. No. Volvo.
Volvo.
Yeah. Then they, Sweden. Yeah, that's right.
ABBA.
Yeah, but people seem to have forgotten about them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They were the largest Swedish export at one point, weren't they?
They were. In terms Swedish of music is still a very big export, but the problem is that most of them are on labels that are not Swedish anymore, so it's difficult to say if they are an export or not.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
I mean, they're on Sony and BMG. Sony and BMG. And, for example, and I mean, that's not a Swedish company, so then the question is, are they Swedes?
We ran into that with our Juno Awards, which is like the Canadian Grammy Awards or Brit Awards, and Bryan Adams was not nominated because they said he wasn't Canadian enough because the album was recorded outside of Canada and the musicians, some of the musicians weren't Canadian, this sort of thing. And it's like, okay.
So what if he was born there? That doesn't matter.
He's born and, you know, lived in Canada and always, you know, been very proud Canadian. That's silly. But I'm Canadian. And
yeah, you are. We can hear that on your accent.
Is that right? I don't have an accent.
Yeah. That's the way I can hear that
people,
you're Canadian.
You say oot in a boot, right?
That's
I'm thinking,
right.
Well, yeah, well, I don't say oot in a boot. I say out and about.
Yes, I was always thinking about what boat is he talking about?
A boat. A boat. Oh, I see. A boat, not a boot.
No, a boat. No,
they always spell it B-O-O-T. A boot.
No. Okay, no, it sounds more like you say B-O-A-T. A boat.
Well, I have been
Nothing wrong with it, because, I mean, it's just a dialect. But
I have been out in a boat. Or in a boat.
Or whatever.
But one of the biggest misconceptions about Canada is that it's cold all the time.
But it is, isn't it?
As soon as you go across the... Well, it's not. As soon as you go across the borders from the United States, suddenly, you know, it's
the temperature snowy. Drops.
Yeah, snowy Arctic weather. And everybody lives in igloos.
But you do have them.
Have.
The igloos.
Not don't very much. No. I mean, if you got way up towards the North Pole, the Arctic Circle, the igloo is more of a... for nomadic, like if they're on hunting, going out and that sort of thing. The Inuit in the north, they would build it sort of as, you know, like putting up a tent as opposed to actually living in it. They live in houses with cable and cell phones and
broadband connections.
Broadband connections. I don't know if there's broadband at the North
Igloo
Pole.
Podcast.
You could have that.
Yeah.
You know, podcast about anything.
Thank you very much for listening to the show. Now, Carsten, tell us, what is our next show going to be about?
Our next show is going to be about soccer.
Okay.
The World Championship is going to be in Germany, and it's going to start next week, and we're going to explore a bit how the Soccer World Championship is changing Germany.
So that's clearly also an update. We'll talk about that next time, 2 weeks' time, on the 16th of June.
Exactly.
I understand that Fernando will be with us again next time, so you are always welcome in the studio.
It will be a pleasure.
Okay. So, we see you again in 2 weeks' time.
Stay tuned!